Tony reads again. When Lupin entered the ministry atrium at 10 a.m., he sat himself in his favorite corner of the food court, an excellent spot where he could observe most of the main atrium without being noticed. This he claimed to do for security purposes, although generally he was just avoiding Shacklebolt. 10 minutes later, Antonin Grinlittle, sporting a long silk coat and trousers in a harlequin pattern of neon pink, orange, and purple, dropped himself exultantly onto the chair beside him.
"Darling, how thrilled I am to see you!" he shrilled delightedly and fluttered his eyelids. "You look simply ravishing this morning. I can swoon with elation. I may suddenly faint. I've always found you particularly attractive in the atrium."
"You have?" Lupin said in a puzzled voice.
"Yes," Tony enthused. "Beneath the golden sparkles of those ceiling lights, you shine like the rays of the sun. You are youth. You are life. You are passion and hope and light and joy."
"Thank you," Lupin responded cheerfully and cast about for an appropriate rejoinder to this extravagant compliment.
"That suit is, well, you have absolutely outdone yourself with that suit," he stated decisively. "Really, it's almost too much to bear."
Tony's eyes misted over, and he whipped out his handkerchief.
Please don't start crying," Lupin said quickly.
"I shall not, my love. I shall struggle to repress my emotions for your sake," he vowed dejectedly. "But I am quite proud of the suit, you know. I sewed it myself without any magic. I find I do better that way. You would not believe how shockingly inexpensive this material was. Madame Malkin was practically giving it away. I shall make you a top hat," he pronounced generously.
"That would be very nice," Lupin responded in a frightened voice. "But you know, Elizabeth, right, Elizabeth, well, she isn't too fond of our bright colors. The Muggles find them somewhat overstated."
"Such a pity. An absolute tragedy," Tony moaned. "But I do understand, my love. They're accustomed to the dull shadings of their dreary, desolate world," he sighed. "Perhaps in time, however."
"She is better about that matching business,"
Lupin told him reassuringly. Both of them paused to glance at an elderly witch who shuffled past their table with an enormous book entitled Despicable Me clutched to her bosom. On the cover of the tome was a frantically sobbing Gilderoy Lockhart, his head larger than life, seizing his hair in his hands as he howled with despair.
"What the hell is that?"
Lupin said with a nauseated expression, and Tony preened in a self-important manner.
"I shall tell you, darling, for I know all about it, of course. It seems that Mr. Lockhart was greeted with a tremendous amount of ill will from the public when his memory returned," he sang out triumphantly. "Something to do with that business of trying to leave the children in the Chamber of Secrets. It did not go over well at all."
"I can't imagine."
"It is obvious to me what he is attempting to accomplish with this horrendously written book," Tony continued superciliously. "He believes that a dramatic show of contrition will recapture the affections of his former admirers. For 792 pages, he whines on and on about his misery and guilt and shame and loss of self-esteem. Not that I have read it, of course," he finished hastily and looked up at the ceiling.
"Tony?"
"Yes, darling?"
"I still know you're lying, even if you look away."
"Oh, well, that is most unfortunate." Tony giggled and Lupin broke out laughing.
"Please tell me you didn't buy it."
"Well, you know I must keep up with the gossip. I absolutely live for gossip," Tony wailed. "Anywho, speaking of gossip," he cleared his throat and wiped his brow quickly. "I must confess that I may have, well, quite accidentally, of course, let slip from my lips, well, the words simply spilled out before I could stop them, the fact that you dropped in the Prince Husitz on your last trip."
Lupin groaned.
"But I was defending you, I was! Tony shrieked in a heartbroken voice. "This person insinuated he was your friend, so I informed him that you would never visit this dreadful and dastardly dark vampire unless you had a very good reason, and that I knew this for a certainty as you had shared with me the cause of your last visit, which was for no other purpose than to obtain information about crossing the borders."
"I also wanted another self-filling thermos of coffee,"
Lupin remarked idly. "This giant ate the last one he gave me."
"Remus! You simply must resist!" Tony exclaimed and threw his hands up in the air.
I say this to you as your treasured friend. This devilish, diabolical denizen of darkness is... Well, I believe he has ensorcelled you.
He did not appear at all pleased when Lupin burst out laughing.
He liked that appellation, he mused. Anyway, we talked about medieval metaphysics and syllogistic fallacies and the use of sigildry in 4th century Mesopotamia. Do you think I can find anyone else who wants to talk about that sort of thing?
Well, no, darling, because those subjects are very dull. Tony sighed and patted his hand. It is difficult being a genius, I suppose. You cannot be blamed. I imagine men of great learning will be drawn together simply for matters of enlightenment.
Right, Lupin said definitively. That is it exactly.
Tony studied him for a moment before narrowing his eyes in a suspicious manner.
You are very quick to agree with me, he pronounced accusingly. I believe more than scholarly conversation is going on. Now you must tell me, what else have you been doing with this vile vampire?
Nothing, Lupin muttered sulkily. Well, we did play a game we made up. It's actually a lot of fun.
He brightened.
Oh, yes, I'm so certain that it is, Tony declaimed in a voice of great sarcasm. There is nothing like fun and games with dark creatures. No, do not speak. You can no longer gallivant about doing as you please. What if the minister dismisses you? You must think of your wife and children.
I always think of my wife and children, Lupin replied in an outraged voice. It doesn't bother Elizabeth if I visit him. When I told her he had heard Beethoven play and had a conversation with him, she said he sounded fascinating,
he declared haughtily. Well, I do apologize, Tony responded meekly, apparently won over by Elizabeth's approval. But you must tell me about this game you play. You know I dearly love a game. Think of the lovely evenings we enjoyed playing games with Sidious and Fenwick. His lower lip quivered as a fat tear leaked from the corner of one eye.
Do you remember the night we played tournament with Arthur and Bilbis Bagshot and Rawbone? He shrilled ecstatically. Wasn't it too funny, darling?
It was, Lupin smiled reminiscently.
Oh, what delightful reminiscences! What glorious recollections! What sacred memories we possess!
Tony sighed theatrically. And speaking of the wildlings, what are we going to do about the wedding invitation? I suppose we must go.
I suppose, Lupin replied with a pained expression. Arthur's going. He says this woman he's marrying is an actual woman. You know, entirely human.
Why on earth would any woman marry that cyclops? Tony grumbled. Well, I suppose some things must be simply enormous, he giggled. But you mustn't change the subject. I do wish to learn this game you played with the prince. We shall play it together!
Lupin gave him a guilty look.
Oh, I'm not actually allowed to play it with anyone else,
he said regretfully.
I do not believe it. How dreadfully childish, Tony declared petulantly. I must meet him at once.
Well, that will never happen.
And why not?
Well, Lupin said thoughtfully, either he will find you instantly intolerable and try to kill you, or he will decide to charm you for some nefarious purpose of his own, and you will fall in love with him. He's very good looking, and he dresses extremely well.
Does he? Tony gushed breathlessly. You must show me a photograph.
Lupin pointed his wand in the direction of his office, and a sheaf of papers secured with magical twine appeared on the table between them. After rifling through the pages for a few moments, he produced a photograph of Radu, strutting about his throne in a resplendence of sartorial glory. Tony stared ardently at the photograph and seemed to melt slowly down into his chair.
Oh, my, he moaned lustfully. He does look extremely dangerous. Simply vulpine. You must let me keep this, he whimpered desperately. I must have it.
Put it in your pocket, then, Lupin said with a revolted expression. That look on your face is making me ill. It's like the time Sirius got stung by all the bees and ripped off his clothes and jumped in the river.
Oh, yes, Tony wailed in an orgasmic fashion. That is my favorite memory of him. It was marvelous.
He pocketed the photograph with a sly expression.
Now, you must tell me about this mysterious game.
It's just a defense game, Lupin said nonchalantly. We give one another scenarios to solve. For instance, 12 Death Eaters are in the third story of an empty building with 10 kidnapped children, and they're going to kill them in 5 minutes, and there's no one there to help you, and what would you do? We used to just explain how we'd get it done, but during our last game, Liviu came up with the premise of an innocent victim who was tied to the mast of a boat during an electrical storm and guarded by six vicious flying monkeys. The giant ones, you know, he said enthusiastically. I had 6 minutes to get this poor fellow down before he'd be struck by a bolt of lightning. Anyway, I tried to explain how I'd go about it, but he just didn't seem to be getting it and kept arguing that it wouldn't work. He doesn't know fuck all about boats. So I said, if we had an actual boat with an actual victim tied to the mast, I would show you how I'd get him down. So we went into the Great Hall and I conjured up a 60-foot schooner with three masts. Liviu then thought it was brilliant, he added with satisfaction. Then he made Barnabas climb up the mast, where he tied him up with some flying rope. Barnabas was not happy at all. Then he sent for seven of those killer flying monkeys. He keeps them as pets or something. And then he conjured up some wicked lightning, and Barnabas started yelling and carrying on like you wouldn't believe. We nearly fell over laughing, you know. We'd had a bit of his fire whiskey. He finished sheepishly. That poor, unfortunate man, Tony clucked reprovingly. That is not the slightest bit humorous. But it really was, Lupin replied gleefully. If you'd seen him swinging up there in the dark, he chortled as Tony frowned horribly. Anyway, Lupin continued piously, it's not as if he was ever in any actual danger. I killed the monkeys with my sword while I was climbing the mast and cut him down with 20 seconds to spare. Not that he was grateful about it, he groused. He hasn't the slightest idea of how to fall properly. A particularly vocal group of witches and wizards carrying copies of Despicable Me effectively drowned out Tony's response.
That poor fellow! He's desperately sorry! Boomed a fat wizard in tartan robes as he scanned the inside cover. It says here he can't even sleep at night!
A terrible thing!
Warbled his companion, a wizened old woman with beady black eyes and an impossibly wrinkled face.
People will insist on holding a grudge!
You can't believe everything in those Potter books, anyway, a richly garbed Egyptian woman announced haughtily. There is Remus Lupin sitting right at that table. Does he look dead to you?
Both Lupin and Tony appeared somewhat startled when a tall figure in a sopping wet muggle scuba diving suit hurried up to their table, his snorkel waving wildly above his head, and prized off his goggles and mask with some difficulty. An ancient flushed face with grizzled gray curls that spilled in all directions emerged, and Tony Harrison shook his dripping head like a wet dog and sat down beside them.
Look what I've found here, Remus!
He croaked out happily and deposited a wet burlap bag onto the table with a squishy plop.
You won't believe your eyes! I was navigating the ocean entirely by my own powers when I discovered them. Ha ha! My powers make it sound easy, but it is not.
No one actually says my powers,
Lupin said in a mildly exasperated voice, although he gave the bag an interested look.
So, where did you make this find?
Ha ha, it's well you should ask me, boy. I was at the bottom of the ocean, north 53 degrees, 54 minutes, 3 seconds, by east 34 degrees, 53 minutes, and 27 seconds. The sodden fellow cackled and waved a spyglass dramatically in Tony's direction. I am a famous navigator, you see.
You were at the bottom of the ocean in Minsk?
Lupin commented impassively.
Well, of course not, young man. Just checking to see if you still knew your coordinates. Now, out, the lot of you!
He turned the bag upside down, and several dozen cylindrically shaped yellow creatures, ranging in height from 6 to 12 inches, began scurrying about the table, jabbering angrily as they shook water from their ears and wrung out tiny drenched handkerchiefs.
Pavel!
Screamed a one-eyed bearded creature in a very wet blue coveralls.
Kapai!
Shrieked a taller, bespectacled version with a wrinkled suit.
Never seen anything like them before, have you? I call them my minions,
the soggy old man warbled excitedly.
How about that, eh? I've discovered an entirely new species. I amaze even myself at times, but don't go newsing it about, he hissed conspiratorially to Lupin. Those idiots and beasts and beings will snatch them up for examination. It's an outrage.
Antonin Grinlittle turned a stony face towards the garrulous gentleman.
I am the head of the Department of Magical Beasts and Beings, he informed him icily.
There was a long moment of silence, broken only by the chatter of the creatures speeding enthusiastically about the table.
This is my friend, Antonin Grinlittle, Lupin put in hastily, who is also called Tony. Tony, this is Tony Harrison. He's a friend of John's.
The two men shook hands in a distinctly unenthusiastic fashion.
I am only called Tony by my friends, Antonin intoned frostily. It is not
actually my name, of course," he sneered. "You, sir, may call me Mr. Grindle."
"And what do you mean by that, you wretched little pipsqueak? I'll have you know Tony is my given name."
Antonin shrugged his shoulders in haughty fashion.
"That's even worse than John," he declared rudely. "And I will have you know that I'm at least 400 years your senior, sir. In my day there was no muggle nickname of Tony. That's the only reason why I was granted the affectionate diminutive of Antonin."
"Well, there weren't many Tonys around in 1876 either," the old man spluttered as water dripped off his bulbous nose. "My mother found it quite avant-garde, if you know what that means. And you'd better watch your tone with me. Why, it's an outrage! You have no idea of the extent of my powers!"
"I think he's demented," Lupin said in a low voice to Tony. "He's just a lonely old man, really. You—"
He broke off his argument when he realized it was having absolutely no effect on Tony's scowling countenance.
"I have to remember, he is actually elderly, you know, not young and handsome as you are,"
Lupin finished coyly. "Well," Tony giggled and flushed furiously, "how kind of you to say so. I am quite beside myself. I do not believe you have ever called me—"
"Listen to those little creatures talk, Remus," the elderly Tony interrupted. "Can you make anything of it?"
The three turned their attention back to the furiously jabbering minions.
"Old Church Slavonic," Lupin said thoughtfully, "with some Spanish, Korean, Japanese, and early Babylonian as well. These really are fascinating creatures."
"Yes, they're very interesting, Remus," Antonin informed her reproachfully, "which does not mean they should be trussed up in a burlap sack. Why, they speak and appear to be sentient beings. We must find a way to communicate with them and assist them." "They're not beings, they're beasts," Tony roared furiously. "And they're mine. I'm the one who found them. Finders keepers," he added childishly.
"I must find a way to decipher their communications," Antonin wailed, ignoring the old man's protests.
"Can you translate, Remus?"
"Well, my old Church Slavonic is pretty sketchy," Lupin replied regretfully. "But I know someone, I'm certain, is quite fluent."
Tony began snatching up the minions and tossing them into the bag, and Antonin Grinlittle's eyes flashed threateningly.
"These creatures are the property of the Ministry," he howled, "and they will remain with me until it is decided just exactly what they are." "Why, you just try and take them from me, you thieving rapscallion," the old man bellowed as he tied the bag and slung it over his shoulder. "I'll never get them back, and I know it. It's an outrage. I'll tell you, I'll blast your brains to smithereens with my powers."
"How about this?" Lupin broke in hurriedly as both men snatched up their wands. "Let me have them for a week. I'll get this fellow to translate what they're saying and write you a report," he told Antonin. "Then the minister can decide if they're beasts or beings or whatever. And if they aren't beings, I promise I'll give them back to you,"
he added to Tony Harrison, who shook more water onto the floor and sneezed loudly. The two Tonys glared at one another for a moment.
"Well, if it were anyone but you, Remus," the sodden old man harumphed. "I suppose so. Shouldn't have ever brought them to the ministry," he grumbled.
"Yes, that's quite fair," Antonin nodded. "Now, Mr. Harrison, let us not be enemies."
"I simply cannot bear it," he sniffed, his expression darkening. "Remus is one of my dearest and most treasured of friends. I cannot have any sort of awkwardness between us," he cried out and burst into tears.
"There isn't," Lupin put in quickly. "Any awkwardness, that is. I'll get this all sorted out. And even if they are beings, Tony," he gave the old man a sympathetic look, "they could still decide to stay with you if they wished. And no matter how this turns out, you'll be given credit for discovering their existence. I imagine they'll put you in Famous Witches and Wizards for this one."
Being included in Famous Witches and Wizards was Tony Harrison's lifelong dream.
"Oh, yes, they certainly will," Grinlittle chimed in happily, his expression changing completely. "You will be extraordinarily famous, sir. Extremely well known."
A huge smile stretched across the old man's face.
"Why, yes, yes," he cackled ecstatically. "I imagine that is so. And I know you're only doing your job, young man," he added repentantly. "I do apologize for my rudeness. Most unlike me. I'm normally quite a jolly fellow, am I not, Remus?"
"Yes, very jolly indeed,"
Lupin said gravely. Why, I thank you, sir. How very kind of you. I do apologize as well," Tony trilled rapturously and flung his arms open. "We shall be the best, the most treasured of friends. I am quite certain of us. Now, let's have a cuddle!"
The two men embraced enthusiastically as Lupin grimaced.
I cannot believe you have never introduced me to this utterly charming and delightful fellow, Remus,
Antonin scolded as he and the old man gazed at one another in a love-struck fashion.
It was quite wrong of you. There's the fellow you got to watch,
the old man chuckled and wagged his finger at Lupin.
That Remus is a sly one. A good boy, you know, but a sly one. My, the stories I could tell you.
And the stories I could tell you, Antonin chirped jubilantly, clapping his hands together.
Why, he once flung me from the top of a speeding train. The top of a speeding train? Heavens to Betsy! Betsy, heavens! What an outrage! I shall speak to John, my dear,
the old man informed Grinlittle soothingly.
He will have a talk with him.
That happened during the First War, Lupin said irritably, and I thought he would morph into his bat form.
It is terribly difficult for me to morph into my bat form, Remus. I can scarcely bear it.
Antonin howled piteously.
You know how ghastly and agonizing and time-consuming it is for me.
He's the worst vampire there ever was,
Lupin stated sullenly.
He can't even stand the sight of blood.
It's the smell. I cannot endure the smell of blood,
Grinlittle declaimed angrily.
I must pinch my nose when I drink it. Not human blood, though,
Tony stammered out with a shocked expression. Antonin swelled up with outrage.
Of course I have not! I've never had a drop of human blood. Everyone knows what happens to blood drinkers and flesh eaters. I drink nothing except the blood of elderly animals who have died peacefully in their owner's arms, whilst being sung lullabies and cuddled in cashmere. That and the blood replenishing potion, of course.
The old man appeared quite relieved to hear this.
Well, what does happen if someone ingests human flesh and blood?
He whispered eagerly. Lupin gave him an incredulous look, but Antonin appeared positively delighted to answer the question.
Why, a werewolf who feeds on human flesh, he called out dramatically, or a vampire who ingests human blood, will never again be satisfied without it. They are taken over by savage longings for more, you see, and it is that consumption of the human body which marks them as a dark creature, and an accursed and feral and repugnant beast, whom the Almighty God shall punish in hell. Well, that explains it,
the old man nodded happily.
I was wondering what exactly was the difference between a dark vampire and one who was not, or a feral wolf and one who was not. I wouldn't have asked, of course,
he informed Lupin sanctimoniously. Lupin felt a sudden thrust of misery, like a knife slicing through his soul, and a surge of self-loathing so violent it left him shaking.
Why don't you ever just shut the fuck up,
he said coldly to Grinlittle.
Well, I never! How dare you use such language!
Antonin screeched furiously.
Do not attempt to intimidate me! You know it cannot be done! I have no idea what is wrong with you,
he added petulantly.
Of course you do, Lupin spat out. You just said it.
Whatever do you mean? And why have you brought that cage?
Grinlittle demanded and pointed accusingly at a brightly painted animal carrier sitting at Lupin's feet.
It's for the pygmy pigs, he replied irritably. I came to pick them up. Elizabeth thinks Annie will like them.
Oh, yes, the pigs,
Tony called out stridently, obviously still quite vexed.
I thought you had stopped by to visit me. You have only to come collect the pigs and then rush back home.
That is true, Lupin said spitefully. I would like to go home and be with my wife, who is not a fucking emotional tornado, and have some peace and quiet.
Emotional tornado,
Tony Harrison chuckled gleefully.
Well put, young man. That's a good one. I mean, that is to say,
he babbled frantically as Antonin swung his glowering face in his direction.
Oh, very unkind of you. Why, it's an outrage. Peace and quiet? Oh, please!
Tony screamed wildly and kicked at the cage.
I know what you want. What do you want is to fling yourself upon her poor ravished body and slap on Miss Kitty!
A puffy white cloud drifted down from the ceiling and exploded into a shower of silver stars, sending all of the avidly listening food court elves scuttling in terror back to the kitchens. And John Lupin strode up to the table, rattling masses of pink and green plastic beads around his neck.
Got these in Mardi Gras 1952,
he announced happily and took in the scene at a glance.
Now calm yourself down, Remus John. People do not always think before they speak. Tony, you should not be dripping about in that wet soup. Get yourself back to the kitchens and find some tea towels so that you can dry off. Now, grin, little lizard,
he called out threateningly as his elderly friend departed in search of towels.
I see that someone is suffering from premenstrual tension. Just what have you been saying to my great-grandson, you quincentarian hematophagic fluttermouse?
Oh, yes, you are terribly amusing, Tony fumed. I will have you know it is your great-great-grandson who has been saying all manner of horrid things to me. But you will take his side, as you always do, so there is no need for me to tell it, he shouted and burst into tears.
No, no need at all,
John responded complacently and sat down at the table, waving up a cup of tea.
Look what I got in Egypt this morning, Remus.
He stretched out a skinny white leg encased in gauzy red harem pants.
Robes are so confining, you know,
he nodded sagely as he pulled out his pipe.
Why, who can fight in a robe? It was quite the to-do, I tell you, when the aura department put us in tunics and trousers in 1878. People found them scandalous, degenerate, depraved, ignominious. Some of the ladies liked them, however,
he cackled.
Oh, yes, you'd catch them eyeing your buttocks when they thought you weren't looking. That was how I caught the attention of my dear departed Ludmila. Saw her taking a little peep at the hind quarters, so I struck up a conversation.
That's very romantic,
Lupin said cheerfully.
Why, yes, so it was,
John sniffed, his eyes misting over.
If only you could have known her, your great-great-grandmother, the only one of my 9 wives who wasn't completely worthless,
he informed Antonin Grinlittle, who merely pouted and looked away.
Returning to the subject at hand, however, I believe I like these harem pants better than a pair of cotton trousers. There's a lot of room down there. Plenty of air swirling about. Breezy. Billowy, give us the bollocks room to swing,
he finished happily.
What are you about, John?
Lupin asked the old man affectionately, and John beamed at him.
Glad to see me, are you? I know why, of course.
Really? Why?
Lupin replied in an interested voice, since he was rather baffled by this fact himself. John merely smiled in a mysterious fashion.
Tony sent me an owl this morning. Told me he'd found something extraordinary washed up on the shingle at Eastbourne. He suggested we meet here,
John declared.
You would think he would change into some clothing, of course, but he's always been a bit of a daft fellow.
I like him very well, Antonin put in sulkily with a face that suggested he had no such opinion of John. He is a dear fellow. So clever and charming. So very
gay,
John finished triumphantly.
Course you like him. He's a homosexual as well. Queer as a cinnamon butter beer. A shirt-lifting pufter. Regular ass bandit. However, he is my oldest and dearest friend,
he nodded smugly.
So I wouldn't tell him for the world. Doesn't matter to me.
Antonin scowled at John. That is ridiculous, he intoned haughtily. Of course he knows. How could he possibly not know? Why, I knew it the moment I...
He really doesn't,
Lupin put in apologetically, although Tony still refused to look in his direction.
He's very old-fashioned.
John pulled a yellow flask from the hip pocket of the harem pants and waved it enticingly towards his grandson.
Got this in Egypt today as well, Remus John,
he said exultantly.
This is a soaring potion. Makes you feel like you're flying, they say.
Lupin examined the bottle and sighed.
I don't know, Grandfather,
he said politely.
You might ought to be careful. You know potions can affect the elderly in unaccountable ways. Oh, anyway, look here, it's banned in Wizarding Britain by the St. Mungo's Potions Commission.
Well, what do those old fusspots know?
John huffed.
I'm giving it a go, I tell you. Up, up and away!
He swallowed a draught with a loud gulp.
Whee! Whee!
He hollered and leapt up to his feet with his arms outstretched, spinning like a demonic top.
I'm a bird! I'm an aeroplane! I'm a rocket ship! I'm in outer space! Whee! Have a taste, you two!
No, thank you,
Lupin said quickly as a small crowd gathered around the twirling old man.
Maybe you ought to go outside.
I absolutely loathe flying, Tony screeched. I am terrified of heights.
What sort of vampire's afraid of heights?
John bellowed and let out a roar of laughter.
Ha ha, piss poor vampire, that's what I'd say. Ha ha, wee, look at me. I am sparkling, Remus John. I'm sparkling and twinkling. I'm a coruscating star. Ha
Lupin whispered as he unsuccessfully tried to grab John by the arm.
Let me take you home, please.
Fiddlesticks! Fiddle stars! Farting stars! I'm not going home! Whee! I'm in seventh heaven! I am the eighth wonder of the world! I'm on cloud nine! I am 10 kinds of fucked up!
That is very nice, Lupin said desperately. But
whee! I'm bursting out of the galaxy! Pop! Pop! Pop!
We cannot have this disturbance in the ministry!
A red-faced, blue-robed MLE officer informed John sternly as he and four other men hurried into the vicinity.
You must leave the ministry, sir, to have you gained your wits.
Leave? I'm already gone. Whee! I'm headed for a new universe!
John shrieked joyfully.
I'm off to Saturn. I'll bring home those rings and I'll wear them as bling. I'll sing in my rings and I'll rule as their king. Ha ha! I'm the king of Saturn! Whee!
He disappeared without a sound, and the MLE officer slunk angrily away.
So we get the pigs?
Lupin asked Tony hopefully,
before the other Tony and his tea towels return.
Yes, I suppose we should, Tony sniffed. Do not forget the minions!
Lupin snatched up the burlap sack with a guilty expression, and the two made their way toward the lifts.
I'll have to keep them in the barn, Lupin said apologetically. I don't think Elizabeth would want them running about the house.
The barn? How dreadful those sweet little creatures cannot live in a barn for a week!
It's a very cozy barn,
Lupin commented meaningfully.
Oh, well, then, all right, Tony giggled. Why must you remember everything I say? And you must forgive me for... What was it you were angry with me about?
I don't know,
Lupin said truthfully.
Anyway, it's me should apologize, and I'm very sorry. Will you forgive me and come over for dinner? Teddy's desperate to hear more of your reading.
Of course, darling. How fabulous that will be,
Tony sang out rapturously.
I simply must show Elizabeth my new suit. She will be dazzled with delight.
Yeah, I think she rather would like that pattern, Lupin said thoughtfully. Perhaps if you have enough fabric, you could run her up a cape as a surprise present.
What a superb idea! I'm certain I have enough material. I shall work on it this afternoon while the creatures have their naps. I do hope it's a quiet afternoon.
They exited the lift on the fourth floor, where both stopped and looked worriedly down the corridor and then at one another.
What is all that noise? Tony wailed. Do you hear all that squealing and barking and howling and those thunderous hooves? Do you think it is coming from my department?
Well, Lupin frowned, since the only other office up here is the volunteer department and no one works in it, I would say yes.
They took off down the corridor with the minions chattering noisily as they bounced up and down in the burlap bag and screeched to a halt in front of the open window of the Beasts and Beings department.
Oh my! Oh my, oh my!
Tony gasped out faintly and clapped a pink satin glove to his mouth.
What the fuck is that?
Lupin said cheerfully. A 12-foot-tall lobster was sitting behind the wooden counter with a newspaper clutched in its shiny clawed forelegs, and as they watched in disbelief, a black antenna bobbed up from its head and scooped up a quill pen.
I think it's doing the crossword,
Lupin whispered.
No! No! Antonin screamed angrily at the oversized crustacean. Whatever are you doing? How did you get to be this tremendous size? And what have you got about your neck?
Around the base of the lobster's fused head hung a piece of rope with various nets attached to it, each net containing a terrified baby creature. These included a mewling green kitten, a zebra-striped spaniel puppy, a squirming baby dragon, a sobbing pygmy pig, a tiny niffler, a blue lion cub, and a two-headed bunny crying for its mother.
Lunch, the lobster replied with a nasty grin. What's a seven-letter word for the substance from which infinite worlds were created, according to the cosmological theories of Anaximander in the 6th century BC? A perion,
Lupin replied immediately.
Right, sorry, Tony. Not the point at all. Hand over those baby creatures,
he told the lobster sternly. The lobster yawned and belched out a huge funnel of sulfurous yellow smoke, and Lupin and Tony hit the floor half a second before the fumes blasted above them and scorched away half of the corridor wall.
He was only 4 inches high yesterday, Tony screeched wildly as he clung to Lupin's neck. It was a baby lobster I bought uncooked from the food court. I enchanted him to speak. I thought Teddy might find him funny, as he so enjoyed my recitation of the lobster quadrille.
That thing is for Teddy,
Lupin repeated incredulously and sprang to his feet, pointing his wand at the lobster's head.
Avada Kedavra!
"'Oh, do let me alone!' the lobster said petulantly.
"'You enchanted it to speak, and then you made it immortal?'
"'Well, of course I did not!' Tony shrieked. "'I simply created a shell impervious to killing curses. "'Well, I do not know how it learned to breathe fire, "'or why it grew to such an enormous size, and... "'Oh, heavens!'
"'Behind the lobster, a pair of 15-foot monkeys "'with bald faces and blue behind sprang into view, "'rummaging through drawers and tossing parchments in the air, "'and hot on their heels, three monstrous kangaroos thudded along, "'yanking a petty cash box back and forth between them. "'An oversized vulture screamed through the air, "'rattling out ancient curses, "'and several inferi in grave clothes materialized out of nowhere in response.' Lupin indicated a shelf above the lobster's head, where a broken green jar labeled Grotesquely Gruesome Creature Grow lay overturned and empty.
That might have caused the problem,
he commented, and Tony burst into tears.
Oh, God in heaven! I shall be sacked! I know it! I will be cast out and tossed into the gutters to die! When will my miserable existence never end? Get it off me! Get it off me!
Half a dozen fluorescent rats the size of small dogs had leapt upon the counter and begun gnawing at it with teeth like small daggers, and one overzealous rat flipped itself right off the counter on top of Tony's shaking shoulders. Lupin snatched up the rat by the tail and whacked it against the wall, where it slid lifelessly to the floor.
"'I can't blow up that lobster,' he mused aloud, "'or it will kill the baby creatures hanging round its neck. "'And we don't want to hurt the other animals just because they got into some... "'Where did you get that stuff from?'
"'Hagrid! Hagrid gave it to me! "'Oh, why did he do it?'
"'Lupin gave Tony a disgusted look, sighed, and shot a Patronus off down the hall.
"'Please, please tell me you have not summoned Shagglebolt!' Tony howled. "'Oh, please, please! Anything but that! Anyone but him!'
"'I don't want to see him either,' Lupin snapped. "'But there's nothing else for it. "'That lobster's got to be shrunk, and so do the rest of those animals, "'before they get loose in the building and kill someone.'
Kingsley appeared with a bang just behind them, his wand outthrust, and scowled horribly at the sight of the enormous creatures.
"'Rotusio!'
he bellowed at the lobster, who promptly shrank out of view behind the desk.
"'What in the hell have you done?'
he screamed and glared pointedly at Tony.
"'What's your name?'
"'Oh, why are you so cruel and so heartless to me?'
Tony cried out piteously.
"'You know perfectly well who I am, and I do admire you so!' he blubbered. "'I am your most ardent supporter, and I find you extremely attractive, and oh my, you do look handsome in that purple silk cravat!'
he gushed excitedly.
"'Remus,'
Kingsley said flatly.
"'What? There is an election coming up in 4 months.' "'I'm aware of that. What is your point?
Please do not let me kill him.'
"'Well, you actually do know his name,'
Lupin said sternly,
"'and you've met him a dozen times.
I cannot say as I recall those occurrences.
"'I still know you're lying, even if you are the Minister of Magic. "'Will you please shrink the rest of them before they burst through that?'
The door to the office bulged briefly before cracking into pieces as the herd of gigantic animals poured from the office, creating a cacophony of noise as they slammed into one another and knocked huge holes in the walls. Behind the animals tottered the three inferi, stretching their decayed arms outwards in a menacing fashion, and bringing up the rear was a fanged crocodile who floated down the corridor in a lagoon of blood. Lupin leapt into the melee and started yelling stupefying spells. Kingsley screamed, "Reducio!" at least a dozen times, and Tony pulled his harlequin patterned coat over his head and shook violently on the floor. Some 10 minutes passed before he dared peep out at the scene, but when he observed that the creatures were back to their normal sizes and the inferi vanished, he leapt up and began loudly shepherding them into the office.
"In you go, then! Well! That's taking care of you," he called out officiously, but studiously avoided looking at Kingsley, whose robes were ripped to shreds and lower lip was split in two,
or at Lupin, who had three gashes down the side of his face and blood dripping from his nose.
"How in the hell did these creatures get into that growth potion?"
Shacklebolt screamed, apparently having spotted the broken bottle.
The lobster must have climbed into the cabinet," Tony rattled out in a terrified voice. "I am desperately sorry, Minister. Most desperately."
"You left a dangerous and illegal potion in an unlocked cabinet,"
Shacklebolt bellowed, and Tony began blubbering like a heartbroken child.
"I do very poorly with locking spells," he sobbed violently. "I am simply hopeless with them."
"Did you ever consider a padlock?"
Lupin suggested amiably, and ambled into the office.
Reparo,
he pronounced with satisfaction.
You are suspended for 3 days,
Kingsley thundered, and Tony let out a high-pitched scream.
Without pay, in addition to a 2,000-galleon fine. And consider yourself on disciplinary probation, he snarled.
Let me die,
Tony wailed in anguish.
Dear Lord above, I beseech thee, let me die.
I'm always on disciplinary probation,
Lupin told him in a consoling tone.
And if you talk to the gnomes in payroll, they'll spread that fine out over a couple of years,
he added knowingly.
And I will speak to you in private,
Kingsley hissed ominously,
since apparently the words do not ever speak to Livia Radu again are incomprehensible to you. Whatever,
Lupin said irritably and glanced at Tony.
See you tonight. Don't forget the lobster.
Shacklebolt fixed him with a disbelieving stare.
It's for Teddy,
he said cheerfully.